Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD TIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9, today with How, Mark and myself, Hugh. On today's show, we'll be speaking to Sam, who originally comes from London. Sam will talk about his early life there and what it was like being raised by a sole parent, getting into the wrong gang at school and how he almost broke his mother's heart by trying to protect himself. Sam is a very nice young guy who realises what he did was wrong at times, and now he's come to terms with his latest challenge in life. A question to you, the listener. How would you come to terms with a bad motorbike accident that leaves you without an arm that really works properly? Could you cope and get on with life? As usual, another interesting chat coming up here on Orange Ribbon. So please stay with us for the next hour on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with How, Mark and Hugh. Our guest today is a very nice young gentleman from London. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Now, to get the show off the ground, Sam, tell us where you come from.
I come from East London. It's quite a built-up area.
Mm-hmm.
Very busy. A little bit of crime.
If you don't mind me saying, you don't have an East London accent.
Because my mum's from Suffolk, so she's got a kind of real soft, more, I suppose, a higher up from London accent, and so she was slightly posher. I had that kind of mix, and then when I came here, I suppose I had such a pliable accent that I kind of settled down into a bit of an Australian twang.
Okay. Australian twang. Okay.
So when you say you're from East London, so how far out of the centre of London is that?
Probably about 25 minutes on the train, okay. About 3 hours by car.
Just on a good day.
All the traffic.
So East London, I've never been to East London, so do you want to just tell us what kind of area is it?
Very built up. I think it's just a lot of a big mix. So you've got kind of people who are maybe not as well off as others. Very different. Every street you go past, it's going to be very different. You've got more government areas where they've got houses that people live in for free, so they're just being looked after by the government. And then you've got people who buy their own houses and they're quite nice areas.
Would you say it's more the working class area of London?
It's more working class. Yeah, I mean, the closer you go towards the city, I think it gets slightly better in places, more expensive.
What about, give us a little bit about your life, your early life in East London.
Well, I went to school in East London as well. I think I did quite well there. I did quite well. I tried hard, but yeah, I suppose it wasn't the easiest place to grow up.
Now, you told me that you were brought up with a single parent, your mother.
Mm-hmm.
How hard was it for your mother in East London bringing up a son?
I think it was quite hard for her. I think she wanted to, I suppose, carry on in what she was doing before I was born. Maybe she wanted to go back into the theatre, but she had to change that, I suppose, to survive. So she started going to school and night classes and studying while doing a kind of average job. And as she was doing that, she kind of upskilled herself.
So she was working, studying, and parenting all
at the same time. Yeah, wow. Yeah. She did quite well. Yeah. She was very, very eager woman. She was definitely trying to get somewhere.
So eventually, where did she get? Because
She got to a second house, so she went from the place we lived in first, which was kind of a government housing, into her first and second house.
Okay. So what you're actually saying is you moved from maybe a not-so-good area to a better area.
Definitely, yeah, and she improved, I suppose, our lives.
Right. Did that mean that you changed schools as well?
I didn't change schools. It was quite convenient because the school, I suppose, was kind of in the middle of the places we moved to, so I could just move around.
The schools in London, was it private schools or, I mean, they call them public schools, and that's the private schools in England, isn't it?
Yeah, I get confused by myself. But
Mark, maybe you can help us out.
Yeah, a public school you pay to go to,
right?
Whereas just regular school is
a regular government school. Yeah. It's just
called a school.
School and public school, really.
Okay.
So
So at school, what kind of education do they give you in the government schools? Is it just
I think they give you all the basics. They do cover all the basics. I think there's quite a good curriculum. I just don't know some of the teachers maybe.
I think it depends on the area if the school is as well. I mean, there is definitely differences in where you live and
the quality of the teaching, and then
that
and
definitely
the,
makes difference. Yeah.
Now, you actually left school quite early as well, didn't you?
About 15. Yeah. So yeah.
Why 16. Why did you leave so early? I thought it was actually 16 in the UK.
I mean, I was just 15 when I left. I left with the same lot of class. There were some of them were 16. I was a little bit younger in my class group. But I left. I didn't carry on and take it till I was 18, which is what they call, I think, A levels. I don't know. I just didn't think I had the grades to really take
it.
What
did your mother think about you leaving so early?
Well, she's crazy about education. She loves. She teaches, and she loves. Definitely upskilling, getting as high as you can where you are. So she was. I don't know. I don't think that's what she was planning.
So did you pass your GCSEs, and did you get that far?
The main subjects, yeah. So like the maths, the English. I don't think I did so well in the religious education and stuff and the other ones.
But was she disappointed when you kind of told her that you're not actually continuing on with your education?
I think she kind of. I suppose knew, she kind of saw how I was going and how I was settling down, and I think she saw it coming.
Now, you told me at school you got in with a gang at school.
Oh, not really a gang, but maybe a group of people that weren't didn't want to try hard, didn't want to do, I suppose, so well, and I suppose what you call it over here is like they just want to bludge. I suppose that's what you call it over here.
But what was your mother's reaction? Do you get in with these people who, I believe, she didn't really think were the right people for her to get involved with?
Yeah, I think she didn't really, at first she probably didn't really realise, but I think as she started to meet more of them, I suppose she wouldn't be, that approving of the way they run themselves and what they do.
Yeah. Is that common in the schools?
Yeah, I think everyone goes into small pockets and small groups. I think in Australia, from what I've seen from friends and family, I think a lot of the time just one of the schools, just one of the people I know, they all seem really friendly, really happy, and they all kind of get on as a whole, and it's much more of kind of a community. They're all trying to work hard together, but it's very very segregated.
Is it like, I mean, my only knowledge of the British education system is watching Skins, the TV show. So
exactly like that.
Is it exactly like that?
I think they're a little bit. I think there was some posher people in the Skins episode as well. You can see the difference.
Leaving so early, were you sort of rebelling against the system, or was it just that you didn't think you were good enough?
I don't know. I think the school it just wasn't an environment that I worked well in. I didn't really settle down well there. It was very structured, very fixed. And
was it that you weren't sort of given the opportunity to maybe look at other types of further education?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's either you stay on school and carry on doing your A levels as they are in the UK to 18, or so there was no choice to go to, say, a secondary college and go college,
like a technical college,
like a TAFE here.
That's right. I think that, I mean, maybe if my grades weren't as good as what they would maybe need to have been to go to somewhere, or get accepted to somewhere that would take me further. But I'm sure there was other areas, and it might have been myself that,
Okay, we'll come back to Sam's story.
Call Joy, 1300-JOY-949.
And welcome back to Joy 94.9 with Hugh, Howe and Mark. And today we're talking to Sam. So Sam, just before that music, we were talking about sort of your school life and that. So when you left school, what was the first sort of job you got?
The first job I went into was being a mechanic, starting off as a trainee apprentice. Mm-hmm. And there I worked a full-time shift.
And how did you sort of get into that? Was it something you were always interested in and went there, or?
I've always been interested in cars. It's one of my hobbies. So I think it was just natural for me to go from, I suppose, the education to the other side of the spectrum, which is more, I suppose, working on cars, more labour.
Cool. Did you enjoy working as a mechanic, but working with the cars? I mean, how involved were you with the actual mechanics of the car?
Just your normal servicing, I suppose. It wasn't too involved to begin with, I suppose. They were letting me watch more and learn it, but...
So it was more like an apprenticeship that you were starting there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was being educated in how to do things.
And did your mother think this was the best path for you to take, or...?
I think she was just, after she kind of accepted that I wasn't going to carry on in school, I think she was just very happy that I wasn't going to just do nothing, just sit around in the house, you know, have no direction or steer.
How long did you stay as a mechanic?
I was doing the mechanic for probably about 6 to 8 months.
Right.
Yeah.
And after that, where did you move to?
I moved into more of a retail environment.
Right.
So selling car and home audio and installing custom work, and you know, it's quite interesting.
So you're pimping cars then?
Basically pimping cars and houses. Yeah, it was fun.
What does pimping mean?
Depends. Pimping ride.
Making them a bit more fun and a bit more, I suppose, music and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Neon lights under the car and stuff like that.
I've been away from the UK too long, haven't I?
You must have seen the Commodores driving around.
Yeah, I mean, they're here as the blue well, light, you know, the underside of the car with the blue lights.
When the audio system's worth more than the car.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's mine. Now, the one thing you told me about this job, you know, the car audio job, was you really enjoyed it, but you had a great boss.
Yeah, the boss was great. I mean, I was pretty fresh when I just first started, and he straight away was like, here's the keys. It's got to be 8:30. And just left it all to me. Like, he didn't, I suppose,
mother
me.
He gave you a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, and it was just weird going from the mechanic job where I was in the position I was in, I thought I could pretty much do it all, but I was watching a lot. Going to that job, which I thought I probably would have needed more watching, and I just was dropped straight in it. So it was quite nice to have a complete change.
Yeah. Mm. Now, I have to actually say here, we're going to go back a little bit, because the reason that you were so surprised you got this job and were trusted so well was that when you were at school and you were in with the small gang of people, you actually got into some trouble, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't the nicest group of lads, and I think, I suppose, in London, I suppose a lot of the time people are picked on. I don't think this is an excuse, but it's just more of a comfort thing. I think if I was in a group of people who were quite, I suppose, had a small amount of power, that way it made people leave me alone, because I was within that gang, which were quite cool.
You were protected in the group, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One reason, though, that you told me you enjoy being in that group is around about 15, you sort of knew you were a bit different.
Yeah. I was, I think, about 15. Yeah, I realized that I was I was gay, and I suppose that made me think a little bit.
Mm. Did anyone in the group know?
I think they didn't know at first. I think they slowly started to suspect it. And, yeah, after a while, I think it was just not said, but it was pretty much known.
People knew.
Yeah.
So staying in this group, one thing you told me was, going back to what we said earlier, you felt protected. But once you realized you were gay, did that make you even feel more protected from the other people?
It just made I suppose the gang have more power, I suppose, because I'm in that gang, I'm being protected. Then if I don't, I'm gay, I suppose that means that they have more power to completely drop me, like in terms of in.
But did they
do anything?
You?
Yeah, did they accept you? Did they like reject you or anything like that?
I think at first they were talking behind my back, maybe spreading a tiny bit of rumor in a small circle. Mm-hmm. But eventually they did. They just didn't have a problem.
Now, you also said that one of the guys in this group you had a little thing with.
Just a small bad romance.
And he never actually spoke to you again, did he?
Oh, look, pretty much. It was just one of those things where I suppose we were a little bit, maybe a tiny bit drunken. Yeah. I was a little bit more relaxed about what I was trying to hide, I suppose, and yeah, things happened.
So just something happened one night and then he just never spoke about it again, sort of.
Yeah, and it was funny because he was the one that pretty much caused it to happen.
Oh, really?
It was weird. It was
so he was
funny.
Just curious and thought, oh, this is a good way to
test the water.
Yeah, test it out.
Now, you did get into trouble, though, and at this point you told me this is where you really felt sorry for your mother, because you got into trouble and ended up in court.
Yeah, there was some problems in being involved in that gang, I suppose. To keep myself within that, I had to carry on doing what they do to make me part of it. But yeah, I didn't make the best decisions in that part
so
of my life.
So basically you were just following on with what they were doing.
Yeah, like
so there was a lot of peer group pressure.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an excuse, but it was probably a part of the reason why I was involved.
And once you're in that group, it's hard, I suppose, to get out of that group anyway. You might start off just being loud and brash and whatever, then it goes to the next step, and before you know it, you're
doing something.
Crossed the line.
Right, yeah, you've crossed exactly. the line that you can't, you have to work hard to get back on the other side of.
Yeah.
How was your mother about this? Because single parent, bringing you up, working hard every day, how did she feel when you got into this trouble?
I suppose she felt, I suppose, a bit betrayed. She's done so much work and worked so very hard to get me into a position that she wanted me to be in and gave me the opportunities. And yeah, I think I could have made better decisions to show her that I appreciated that.
Mm. And during this time, was she still working and studying?
She'd finished studying. She's now working probably in a few jobs later, and she was definitely doing a lot better.
Yeah. Did she, like, you know, try and like bring you out of the situation, talk to you, or do take any action to prevent you from, you know, going further with the gang or anything?
Get a visa
that?
To Australia.
Yeah, we'll come to that very soon. Now, once you left school, though, you abandoned these people.
Yeah, definitely. I think. Well, not the second I left school, but I think when I went from the mechanic job into the next job, I suddenly had a bit more responsibility. Mm. I think I suddenly saw the light.
And were these guys working as well, or were they
on
just
and off.
Dossing
no,
around?
Not
basically?
Really. Yeah. Not much.
So
I think
you,
one
so
of
you
them
sort of grew apart from them because you've got a good job of responsibility. And
yeah, I think I was out the loop a little bit more. And I think one of them was doing a course, but generally, no.
Mm. And you told me that you had obviously a great love of cars, and you worked in the audio shop. How many cars did you have?
About four or five. Yeah, wow. I bought one car, sold a car, bought another car.
How could you afford all these cars?
I think I was just the money I was earning from the shop. I think I was pretty much spending it all on the cars. I think my mum was kind of happy seeing that I was making an effort, at least doing things in different areas and interests, and she didn't mind helping out a little bit. I tried to cover as much as I could, but
it was a hobby. Did it like actually allowed you to actually make any profit out of it? I mean, if you keep saying that you bought a car and then sold a car and bought another car,
more by luck. I think the first car I did make a profit from, but I suppose it was more just putting money into it, probably getting nearly the same out, but not just for fun. I suppose doing them up and stuff.
Did you ever think about starting your own business with this? Or?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, I think that's something that I've been very serious about thinking about.
Mm. Now, we've already said that you realised you were gay. And this was long before here. At this point, did your mother know?
No, my mom didn't know at all during that whole period of time, even moving forward to when I was working.
Mm.
She didn't really have a clue. Yeah.
So why didn't you tell your mother?
I think it's just one of those things that I think if she'd brought it up, I probably would have just said, yeah, I am. But I don't know, I thought she doesn't tell me much about her love life. I just thought it wasn't relevant. I suppose I wouldn't come out and say I'm straight. I don't know. I just didn't feel.
There was never any girlfriends or girls on the scene. So
in primary school, but never after that.
Yeah.
In primary school. Well, we'll come back to Sam's story very shortly.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Hal, Mark and Hugh. And today's guest is Sam. And before the break, we were talking about his mother not knowing that he's gay. Now, you've mentioned that while you were working at the audio shop at this time, you also have a boyfriend. And even after that, your mum still doesn't know?
Yeah, I mean, he was introduced as a friend. So I suppose I think she preferred this friend to some of the previous friends. So she was probably not thinking too much into it. She was just thinking, oh, look, he's moving better and up in the world a bit in his social circles. But
and,
yeah.
And you were saying that he would stay over as well, and she still didn't know what went on behind that door.
It was over, I suppose, quite a lot. But yeah, no, she did. I don't think she suspected it. She said as well that she didn't really. Yeah.
You are an only child. So, and she was a sole parent, and she was working every day, all day. So she probably only saw you a little bit at night. So
yeah.
Do you think that's why you had so much freedom?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, the generic circles that most, I don't know, a lot of gay people go into, I suppose I wasn't that, I don't know, like it's not like a generic thing, but I suppose I was quite like mechanic and things like that. Yeah. I suppose it was just covering.
You went the stereotypical queenie guy that she
exactly.
would have expected.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think that maybe was why she didn't really think it.
Mm. Were you going out to the bars or anything at this time?
I was still pretty young. I think I went to my first gay bar, when I was probably just turned 18. And that was pretty exciting.
In London? In East London?
Yeah, so whereabouts?
That was in London as well. And that was pretty fun. Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
So is that like Compton Street or into
I can't remember
city?
The name. I think it was called the Black Hat or something. Not too sure. But it was very different environment. Yeah. I was very like, wow, this is fun.
So when you were in London and coming into maybe the centre of London where you have sort of the gay districts like around Compton Street and Soho, how did you feel walking around that sort of area?
Oh, it's a bit more fun. It's a bit more interesting. It was like learning about different areas and different, I suppose, groups. And yeah, it was educational.
Now, right about this time, your mother broke some news to you and she said she wanted to come to Australia.
Yeah, she said she'd she wanted to move over to Australia, and I think her reasoning behind it was just to move me up in the world a bit, into a better place.
How did you feel?
I didn't really know much about Australia. I didn't really know anything about it. I just thought it was basically just a bit of desert.
Hadn't you seen Neighbours?
Yeah.
I didn't really watch any of those shows. But yeah, look, I didn't really know anything about it and I hadn't really looked into it. So from where I was so settled, it was quite a shock. So yeah, it was definitely quite a shock.
So what was your initial reaction? Yeah, that's fine, I'll go with you. Or, oh my God, what's she doing to me?
I'm not going to think about it until she's actually got the visas, because I'm not going to get myself all ready to go and then find out that we're not actually going. So I kind of just ignored it.
So what was the reason for her choosing to come to Australia?
She has a brother here who's been here about 20 years. So that's what I suppose she was just seeing his life and how well he's doing over here and decided that she wanted a piece of that.
Now, you mentioned to me also your mother, as you said, has a brother here and he had a nice big house and everything else. And one of the facts that you gave me was that your mother's house was actually worth more than the house here that our brother owns. Is that the house in East London, that is?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the house here that she's got is, I suppose, a lot bit bigger, a lot nicer, and next to the sea versus next to a train station. It's not. That's the only real plus that one had. So yeah, she definitely.
So I take it the price of houses in even East London is very high.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a very expensive place to live, and it's really hard to get into owning houses and owning a house in the area, I suppose, she bought the house in.
Mm. So how long was it before your mother managed to get all these visas for you and her?
I think it took about just over a year and a half to get the visa sorted out. I think she might have applied before I actually found out about it. I think she started looking into it and getting the ball rolling to begin with, because it is a very long process. Mm-hmm. And I think she was just testing the water, learning about it.
Once you'd found you were coming to Australia, how did your boyfriend take
it? He was very upset about that. And I think we were very close, and he was, he was very upset about that. And yeah, it was quite a dramatic part of my life. So
is that when your mother found out, or...?
Not yet.
No. It was a little bit further on, but we'll come to that story just very shortly.
Definitely.
So when you did move here, what was it like arriving in Melbourne?
Well, when I arrived here, it was definitely, it was just coming into winter. So it was definitely a bit of a letdown. I was like, there's a beach there. I can't go to it. That's a shame. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was pretty stoked when it did get a bit warmer.
Right.
So how long ago was it that you moved here?
I moved here. I've been in Australia now for probably about 22 or 23, 24 months, something like that. I don't know exactly when, but coming up to 2 years, yeah.
How long did it take you to settle down?
Honestly, I think probably about a year before I was kind of settled. And then now I'm pretty much completely settled down.
What did you miss of East London? What was the one thing that you really missed?
I think the music, the culture, a lot of history and old buildings and just things like that to begin with. And then I started to see lots of other good things that Australia has. And then I kind of swapped, it's got this, that's got that. I'm happy with this. So, yeah.
Mm. What about the boyfriend? I mean, you left a boyfriend behind.
Yeah, I mean, that was quite hard. And yeah, it definitely made it a lot more stressful. I think the move wouldn't have been as so stressful. But
now, you mentioned also off air that he actually came out here.
Yeah, we were still talking, and it was, I suppose, a bit of a long-distance one for a while. And I'd been about 3 months. He decided to come visit in his holidays, so he came over for about 2 months.
How old was he when he came?
He came here when he was 17, so it was quite a big effort for him to come over, and I definitely appreciated that.
Mm. He must have really missed you.
He did. Yeah, I mean, we really missed each other, and I think we were still talking. It wasn't any arguments. We tried to really try and keep friends and at least try and... keep civil.
Did he actually try to keep you to stay in London rather than come to Australia with your mother?
Yeah, I think it was hard because, I mean, he did know from quite early on, like when my mum told me, I kind of said it's a possibility. So I didn't just jump it out at him at the end. So I think he respected that he was told at the beginning before we got really serious.
Mm. When he came out here and then obviously had to go back to London, how did you feel? Did you want to go with him?
I don't know. I think I was trying to sell it to him. So
Australia.
Yeah.
So he wanted him to stay out here.
Yeah. Because he wants to do university. So I was like, come on, there's some really good universities here. Marine biology, it's something that Australia has a lot of. And why not? Yeah. So that's what I was trying
to
do.
But he didn't take you up on that then?
I think he'd already really sold down there, and the education he was going through was definitely very strong and sturdy, what he was doing. Mm-hmm. So he really had a real sort of platform that he was going towards to his uni there. And I think it would have maybe been very hard to get the same opportunity that he was in. So
when you moved to Australia, did you go and get straight into working or studying, or what were you doing when you first arrived?
When I first arrived, I wasn't really doing much right at the beginning. I was out in Mount Martha,
right?
So down the peninsula, and that was a bit quieter. And I don't know, I wasn't.
How
really
did you find that coming from sort of East London to Mount Martha? It's a bit of a difference.
It was a very big difference. It was a bit of a culture shock, and I didn't realize obviously that there was some similar places, but yeah, it was fun.
Okay, we'll come back to Sam's story very soon.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is Orange Ribbon with How, Mark and Hugh, and our guest this afternoon is Sam, who comes from East London. And Sam, would you like to tell us about your music you just played?
Yeah, oh, that's a track from MIA. I think she was half Sri Lankan or Sri Lankan, came over to the UK. Yeah, and she definitely does some very good music. And yeah, I love all her tracks. They're very different.
I actually enjoyed that.
One of them.
she did one of the songs on Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah. Oh, did
yeah.
she?
Yeah,
oh,
I think it was called Paper Planes.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that was what got
really
her all her fame.
Writers, yeah,
yeah, okay. She made it like 2 years before the movie, but yeah, it suddenly got famous.
Good. Now, we've been talking to you about basically your whole life in East London, and we got up to when you came to Australia. But before you came to Australia, something tragic happened. Do you want to just tell us what happened?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was in a motorbike accident, which caused me to take quite a big injury from that.
What do you want to just take one step back, because you actually borrowed someone's motorbike?
Yeah.
And in the UK, you must have third-party insurance at
yeah,
least.
Yeah, that's right.
And because it was somebody else's motorbike, you didn't have the third-party. And something happened on the way back. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was on the bike, and I was riding the bike home from visiting my boyfriend. The only reason I took the bike out was my car was actually damaged at the time. So, yeah, I took the bike to see the boyfriend. And on the way back, I think a policeman was going to pull me over. And I made a bad choice to try and evade that. And
so tell us, what did you do? Did you just ride off?
Well, I was riding at the time, and it was a little bit further back. And I saw him do a U-turn with his lights on. So he hadn't actually come up behind me yet, but I saw that and I was like, it's going to be for me. So I just went and shot off, trying to get away, I suppose.
What speed did you get to?
About 160 miles an hour on one.
Wow.
Well, maybe close, but 140, 150 so miles an hour.
So what's that in Ks?
That's like 200 and something 200, Ks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
On a straight road. And then I came to a bend and I was probably doing about 100 miles an hour. But then I realized that I took the bend completely wrong and it was a lot steeper than I first thought. I just decided I'm not going to be able to take this corner. I'm just going to try and slow down as much as I can before I lose it, basically. So I just slammed on the brakes as much as possible and just didn't skid, and then hit a lamppost.
After you hit this lamppost, what do you remember?
I woke up in hospital. So I woke up in hospital. I had no clue what happened. I was quite heavily drugged. I didn't really realize what had happened. I thought it was a car accident, because I was thinking, I usually drive my car, so must have been in my car. So I was very confused.
And tell us what injuries you ended up with.
I sustained some heavy nerve damage. It's called a brachial plexus injury. So where your nerves come out of your spine column, some of them were ruptured and some of them were just damaged. It caused me to lose full use of my left arm and any motor use. And also lost some feeling as well.
Right.
Slowly getting better. I've had some operations since then, two operations.
Did you have any broken bones?
No bones, just nerves. No? I would have preferred bone. Bones are easy.
So how long were you in hospital for after that?
A few weeks. Yeah, I think it was a few weeks, and then I had an operation I think I was in there for a few days, and then I had an operation, and then I was recovering from the operation. And I think I was recovering for, it wasn't that long, because I looked okay to look at. It looked fine, but there was a lot happening inside.
Right.
It wasn't so healthy.
So when you damaged these nerves that come out from your spine, it affected your left arm?
Yeah. So I basically lost the use of my left arm. So it obviously caused a lot of change in the way I had to do things, manual to automatic all of a sudden, which is a shame.
How did they tell you this? I mean, because it's quite traumatic, really, isn't it?
What do you mean, sorry?
How did the doctors put it to you, that your injury?
At first it was very frantic. I was in A&E, so I didn't really know. No one really knew what happened and what was wrong with me. But I think I kind of came to that conclusion. I didn't know how long-term it was, but I came to that conclusion myself while I was sitting there trying to use my arm and it wasn't working. So yeah, it was definitely a shock. But I didn't know if this was temporary or if this is semi-temporary or what. And it just
What about your mother? How was she taking all this?
It was very shocking for her. And obviously, this was when I started to become a little bit better and I'd got that job in the shop and everything was looking up, and then suddenly this was a very big speed bump.
Something else has happened.
And yeah.
Did your mother blame you, or did she put it down to just a bad accident?
I think probably 60-40. I think she probably 60% me. It was my fault, and it was a bad decision. And I suppose I didn't learn. Maybe I probably didn't learn from the early ones enough.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even one way to look at it would be, I mean, if you're coming off a bike that fast, to actually survive is lucky.
That was the first thing I thought when they told me that. I was like, well, you know, it's a lot better than what could have happened. And that's true. So that's the one way to look at it.
Now, your boyfriend visited you when you were in hospital and all drugged up.
The next day.
Yeah. Tell us what happened there.
He turned up and my mum and him were there. Well, he was there first with me. And my mum arrived and she was like, oh, who's this? And I was like, I was pretty pretty high at the time on the drugs. So I was just like, oh, this is my boyfriend, Brad. and she was just like, staring at me, and I was just like, okay.
So this is how you told your mother you were gay?
Yeah.
So it was quite a secret room involved.
Quite a stressful environment for mum to find out that I was gay. Yeah. Wasn't nice.
She was just getting over the fact that you had a near fatal accident, and then all of a sudden you tell her you're gay.
Yeah.
I know. How did she then react to you?
She was just surprised, and she said to me, look, I had no idea. And I think she was just surprised that I had mentioned it to her before, that she'd realised, and she was okay with it. It was just a shock for her.
And did she know the boyfriend? Had she met him before as a friend?
As a friend, yeah. So she pretty much knew him. So that was good that she'd, you know, had some experience with him, so it wasn't a complete stranger to meet.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, it was after the accident, your mother had the visas to come to Australia.
Yeah, so she'd already booked the visas, and I had the accident while she was in the process of selling the house, so it was pretty much nearly over at the time in England. So it was quite a stressful change that it went from the accident, the coming out, to departure.
Because of the accident, did she ever consider not coming?
I think at first she was just waiting to hear and see what the doctors were saying, but I'm not 100% sure on what her internally she was saying, but... I think she may have crossed her mind, but I think she was more thinking of the situation she was in. Financially, she had to kind of pretty much do it. Everything had already been transferred over. So, yeah, I think she was more thinking that she'd arrange me to be looked after maybe, and then she'd go over and get everything ready and then
get someone
arrange
else to
me to come after. Yeah. Mm.
So how long after the accident did you move over here?
I think it was within a few months. Sold my cars, sold everything, and got ready to go.
But during that whole process, because you've coped like exceptionally well. I find, as someone who's like, you know, lost the use of your left hand, your left arms. But like during that whole time, how were you emotionally in terms of dealing with this situation?
I think I've got quite a strong coping mechanism. I mean, I don't know how someone else might have taken it. I really don't know. But I think my way of looking at it is. Looking at like a problem or an issue that you have, just getting stressed out about it isn't going to help. It's just a case of picking up and moving on.
Mm.
And it's hard, but you've got to just carry on and not let it hit you too hard.
Coming to Australia, I mean, we've already said, how long did it take for you to settle down? You told us a year, roughly. With your injury, did it make it even harder leaving the UK and having to come to Australia?
Yeah, there was a lot of stress. I've got my boyfriend upset that I'm leaving. I've got the injury. I've got, the complete culture shock, the complete change over to here. And yeah, it was a lot to cope with at the time.
And did you have sort of rehabilitation to go through to as well?
Yeah, so there was some great surgeons over here and some great some people over here who could help and long term and keep an eye
on. How many operations have you had?
So I had the first operation in the UK just after the accident, and then I came to Australia, and within about 6 to 7 months I'd booked in a second operation,
right?
Like the second stage of repairing to a degree.
Here in the UK you'd be in a public hospital,
NHS.
Yeah. What happened in this country?
I have Medicare, so I think I went into that. It was booked in by the doctor was actually a private doctor, but he also worked in the public sector as well.
Okay.
And he's trying to write a journal on the specialism that he's in. So he booked it in a public hospital, but he was a private doctor. So he was very experienced and he did it, so I didn't have to obviously pay for it, but he still got to learn from the operation, and I suppose, use that with his own work.
Now, I could be wrong, but did you tell me that your actual injury that you have is very rare?
It's relatively rare. I mean, one of the way a doctor put it to me once was sometimes if someone was drunk and they were sitting on an armchair and their arm hangs over the arm overnight, and then when they wake up, they can't feel their arm and their arm doesn't really work, and that's temporary, but that's kind of like the nerves being trapped for a little while.
Right.
And this is obviously more permanent than that because they were actually damaged, but yeah.
So you say you've got to have operations. So is it something that they hope to be able to repair and you get the use of your arm back?
Yeah, I mean, I've started to get some basic bicep movement back now, so it's definitely on the way up and up, and that obviously helps my mindset. So yeah, and I just move on.
One of the things you told me, though, is that you don't really want another operation because the last one was quite bad for you.
Yeah, the last operation, it was very stressful, and it definitely hit me for six, and It was quite a hard situation to go into. Luckily, work was great with it, and let me have the time off.
And also, your other arms, you've got an injury from the motorbike accident in your wrist?
Yeah, I've got a scaphoid injury in my just on my hand, just near the wrist.
This is your other arm, the good arm?
The good arm, the right arm. And this is causing me to have a bit of, I suppose, a bit of pain in that, and makes it a bit hard to do some things. But yeah, it's something I need to have an operation with coming up in the next 6 to 12 months.
And what will happen after operation?
That operation will cause me to have to work with no arms for a while, and some real basic, maybe using my elbow, that kind of thing. But it will be about 6 to 8 weeks from that arm being able to be used with any force. I think maybe real light duty, but yeah. So it will just be. But from then on, hopefully, that would be the end of any.
And have they gave you a rough idea, or do they know when your left arm may become completely good? Or?
It's basically just every case is really different, especially in a situation. And I think it's just a case of what's happened so far has been really good in terms of the outcome. And I think even if it stopped right now, that would still be a great outcome for me. Being able to move it to a degree I can now is still really helpful.
Mm.
So yeah, it's definitely an improvement.
And I mean, you're a very chirpy person. Mm-hmm. And even before when I spoke to you off air, you're always happy, and you showed me how you put your coat on with one arm and everything else. I mean, is this something, obviously, it's like a handicap that you have.
Yeah.
Has it been easy for you, though, to learn everything you need to do? Did it take months to, you know, learn to dress yourself and everything?
I think when I first came here, I had a lot of time on my hands, and that's when I kind of was learning about how best to do things, how to clean, how to dress, and it was something that I, while on that stage I had to learn. But it definitely became more easy once I realized that there was another way of doing it, and it's just as quick, it's just different.
So did you ever, while all this was going on, think, because you, like I said, you seem very positive with everything from the operation, but with the times you were thinking I can't cope with this, or
I think it was good I had the support from my mum, and she was still really supporting me and being very helpful, and just basically looking after all the stuff that had to be worked with, and looking after drugs and all the pain care, and booking in, you know, seeing surgeons and specialists. And she definitely was like a real support net for me. And like she's always been there for me, and she really helped that situation.
Awesome.
Well, Sam, I'm afraid we've come to the end of the show. But thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
No, it's been fun.
I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's not easy talking about an injury like you've just done that with us, but I wish you well, and I hope it does repair itself very quickly, and you get better soon.
Yeah, and if anyone's got any questions, they can always send us an email. And sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be very happy to hear anything that anyone's got to say. Well, that's it for another week for Orange Ribbon. Our thanks to Sam for taking time out today to have a chat with us. Also, thanks to Adrian on the front desk. Oh, he's not actually there, but he is the person who gives us program support. Coming up next on Joy is the Women's Zone with Lisa and Sue. Yeah, they're giving me the thumbs up here because I got the names right this week. I think I said Kaz Mitchell one week, and they were sitting in the studio. So, thanks for joining us from Howe, Mark and myself on Orange Ribbon today. Orange Ribbon will be back at the same time, 2 o'clock next Saturday afternoon, with more insights into our GLBTIQ community here in Australia and around the world. So thank you very much for joining us. Bye for now.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.